Sairam dear listeners and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. Today is November 7th, 2019. The birthday month has begun. And I feel so happy sharing with you that the conference that is going to happen during the birthday celebrations this year, 2019, is focused on the Vahinis, Bhagwan's Prema Vahini, Sandhyanya Vahini, Sutra Vahini, Upanishad Vahini, Leela Kaivalya Vahini, Ramkatha Rasa Vahini, Bhagavata Vahini, Satya Sai Vahini, Sutra Vahini. These immortal texts are the focus of the deliberations of devotees all over the world during Bhagwan's birthday celebrations this year, 2019. Really grateful to Swami for having given us this opportunity through Radio Sai to every week contemplate on His immortal words. Every time you read what Bhagwan has written, it always makes you feel, I don't need to know anything else. Just this one line, just these two lines, just this little para is enough. That is how powerful, that is how significant, and that is how simple His message is. We are now in chapter 7 of Sandhyanya Vahini. By Bhagavan's grace, we have Brother K.M. Ganesh, Brother Srinivas Rao and Brother Bhargav with us to dwell on the first segment of chapter 7. So let's listen to what Bhagavan has written here and then we will pray to Him to guide this discussion.
Pranam, Swami.
Oh, you have come, is it? You didn't come for Dasara.
I thought the number of devotees then would be too many. I may not be able to speak to you to my heart's content. Hence, I came now, a few days prior to your birthday, so that apart from witnessing your birthday celebrations, I can seek your blessings for the birth of bhakti and jnana in my heart.
Good. It's a noble idea indeed. But do you mean to say that bhakti and jnana will not be born in you on days other than my birthday? Is that your idea?
No, that is not so. The advent of your auspicious form happens on an auspicious day and time. My idea is that, at least on such a sacred day, your sacred words should purify my heart and get established there.
Very good, dear one. What is the sandeha, the doubt you have today?
I have come today to listen to any of your nectarous words and put them into practice. As the saying goes, even if you go to Kashi, you have Shanishwara by your side. But unlike that, I did not bring the demon of doubt along with me today, nor did it follow me. This is due to your unbounded grace.
Very good. Understand that when these doubts do not come of themselves, nor are entertained by you, that is to be considered as purity. When these two happen, it can be called one-pointedness. In any case, when you have no doubts, why should I remind you of it? Then tell me, what shall I speak to you about?
Swami, tell me how we should generally conduct ourselves. What is the feeling that we should entertain? Which are the subjects that we should dwell upon? What are the acts we should do to deserve the grace of the divine? How can we attain your proximity? Please tell me only some such gems of wisdom which are absolutely important.
Oh, it seems Parvati asked Ishvara once, "It is difficult to retain in memory the Sahasranama, the thousand names of God. It takes a long time to learn and repeat them. So please tell me one single name which is the essence of all the thousand." Similarly, you too perhaps find it difficult to grasp all that I write and explain. And so you also are asking me to tell you about the most important, isn't it? But you see, the essence of all the names is same. However, it is not so for the subjects I am talking about. Even if the result is same, the practices and the paths are different. They cannot all be summarized in one word. Still, I am giving you now some selected jewels which are very essential. Treasure them, experience them, put them into practice and derive joy therefrom. In fact, decorate yourself with these jewels.
That is exactly what I want. How lucky I am. Please tell me.
Then listen carefully. I shall tell you. 1. Prema, love, should be considered as the very breath of life. 2. Believe that the love which manifests in all beings equally, assuming different forms, is indeed Paramatma. And 3. Have the conviction that the one Paramatma is in everyone as the embodiment of love.
So that is the first segment of chapter 7. So it starts with the birthday vibes, if we can say.
Yes.
So the devotee is saying, "Swami, I seek your blessings for the birth of bhakti and jnana in my heart when I'm here for your birthday celebrations." And Swami says it's a good idea, it's a noble idea. And I think that is something I felt to reflect upon, because often we feel the birth of our sojourn on earth happened when the birth of divine love happened in our heart. In fact, I remember talking to so many devotees, and this senior devotee, you ask him, "Sir, what is your age?" And he will say, "I am 24. And he would definitely be looking someone who is 60 plus. And you put a question mark on your face and he says that, "All the years that I lived before coming to Swami, I was only existing. From the time I knew Swami, that is when I started truly living. That is my birth. So from that day, I am only 24 years old." So that way, I feel just like Brahmins traditionally used to be called Dvija. They are twice born, because once they are born at the time of their physical birth, and the second birth is when they are invested with the sacred thread. And the sacred thread connotes the journey of their individual self towards the divine. It connotes the binding of their soul with the divine. And I feel this is also so true for every Sai devotee, for every person for that matter. When the love for the divine originates in your heart, when you start living that life of feeling for the divine, longing to connect with the divine, I think that is when another birth happens. Mm. And in that way, I think all of us are twice born. And I think birthdays and these auspicious occasions are moments in life which propel you towards making those changes in your life. And I think that's what the devotee is saying. I seek your blessings for the birth of bhakti and jnana in my heart. And Swami is telling, yes, it's a noble idea. Good.
Yeah, just taking your thought forward, like when we talk about Swami, his beautiful form, this form is something which he says it's a crystallization of the whole divine energy, the whole divine energy of the universe. The one which was there is crystallized in his form. It's called the Nada Swarupa.
Hmm.
And then when you say, the Swami says that Vedas are the breath of God, and the basic essence of all Veda is Omkaram. And Omkaram is something which actually creates, sustains and dissolves the whole universe. And then when we say Swami is God for us, his breath itself is that Omkara which sustains everything. So when we think about it, that beautiful form which we had seen, we have interacted with, and even now we can hear the beautiful voice of that form, the same form is the one which, whose breath, the breath of that form is itself the sustenance, the creation and the dissolution of the whole universe. So it is so special. Like if we don't try to actually dwell upon it, if we actually try to understand, we will be like stumped by the enormity of it.
Hmm.
Which is a small form of 5 feet 3 inches, which used to just come and smile and talk to us and go. That form is, it encompasses everything. And like how Purushottam says that Atyatishtha Dashangula means it not only encompasses the whole universe, inanimate and animate, but it is 10 steps more than that. That much is its reach. So that whole thing which is actually cannot be comprehended by the human mind is the small form which you used to see, the sweet small form in front of us. Like, and even the same, that form's voice, even if we can see him in the videos and all, but and we can even listen to that voice. The voice which we say is the breath of God or the Vedas or the Omkara. Even now we can listen to the same voice. So, is it not so amazing to even think about it that, yeah, it, that's why when they told that, when he says it's a very beautiful, a very apt occasion to actually come and ask you these questions and get your answers. Swami also says yes. Swami also accepts that yes, this birth is special. Like, Swami's birthday is very special. It is not, it's totally out of the ordinary. It is not something which generally happens in the life cycle of any human being or the life cycle of the whole earth.
Absolutely. I think that is something very interesting that you are mentioning about the cosmic consciousness.
Mm.
Concretizing itself in flesh and bone.
Mm.
And which happens on such rare occasions that whenever it happens, it is a great moment.
Yes.
For humanity. And it is a moment for awakening.
Yes.
For each soul into that supra consciousness.
And without our knowledge, we are contemporaries of that.
Yes.
Being which is incomprehensible. Like, it is something which is beyond comprehension for anyone.
In fact, just this morning I was listening to a beautiful Samarpan talk by Brother Rajesh, and he says that when he was 10 years old, his parents were devotees of Kanchi Shankaracharya, and Shankaracharya ji had come to someone's house in Chennai, and so parents told this boy also to come along, but this boy had already started going to Balvikas classes, and he had heard so many stories about Bhagwan. He had developed that kind of reverence and connect with Swami. And he felt, when we have Swami, why we have to go for go to all gurus? And where is the absolute necessity of doing all this? And he did not agree to the parents, and he said, no, I would want to stay at home. So the parents did not force him, and they had the darshan of Shankaracharya ji. And as they were returning, suddenly they came to know that Shankaracharya ji is coming towards their direction, and he's visiting another place which is just 2 minutes away from their house. So now his father came and told him, see, I think you should come now, because your mother was very upset that you did not go, and he should come and seek the blessings of Shankaracharya. And the boy, not because he developed any interest towards that visit, but just didn't want to disappoint the mother, so he agreed to go. And he was just sitting, he was one among the crowd, and he had all these thoughts about the futility of going to anyone else, and what is the even point? Why can't the Shankaracharya tell everyone to go to Swami? When Bhagwan is there, why is he coming, and why is he giving discourses? Why is he collecting people? Why is he doing all these things? Baba is there, Swami is there, he should tell everyone go there. So he had that thought, and he was in the crowd. The Shankaracharya, as he alighted from his car and he was about to go into the house, suddenly he stopped and he asked for way, and he went straight to this boy. And this boy was really stunned, and he did not ask anything, Shankaracharya. He just said, what's your name? And the boy told his name. That's it. And the Shankaracharya blessed him, and he turned back and went inside the house. And the boy was really a little stunned, because it is quite out of the ordinary. Never thought that he will just come straight to him and have a conversation. He was actually zapped. And he was still standing there outside, and the Shankaracharya spent some time inside. And when he emerged to return, the people there had performed many rituals and done many adorations. And so he was covered with a garland of lemon, and they had put on his head a kiritam, a bit of it, a small crown. And so he emerged from the house with all the elements of worship that was done to him. And the boy again thought, why is the Shankaracharya accepting all these things? Why he's getting himself adorned with a crown, accepting garlands, and why is he doing all these things? Swami is there. He should direct everyone there. And when the Shankaracharya came down, again, the Shankaracharya stopped on his path, turned and walked straight to that boy. And now he did something which blew the boy off his feet. The Shankaracharya removed that throne, put it on the boy. He removed that garland, put it on the neck of that boy, on the shoulder of the boy, but did not say anything, and just went to his car and returned. So this was something which remained in Rajesh's mind very, very vividly, because it was an experience which really shook him. Many years later, when he had the chance to join Bhagwan's University, that happened in 95-96, and as a student in the 11th class, and in the year 2000, he had this opportunity once to be with Bhagwan in the interview room. And that day, Swami was reading something, and after some time, Swami was just silent, you know. I think people who have lived with Bhagwan would have experienced those moments of just nothingness, when Swami would just be quiet. You would probably be in the interview room for 1 hour, but 55 minutes of it, Swami was just quiet. And he would be just looking into the horizon, or sometimes he would be just talking to himself. He would be just be still for minutes together. So this boy was sitting there at Bhagwan's feet, and he wanted to have some conversation, but didn't have that audacity to break the vibes there. He kept waiting, and then after a while he picked little courage and he said, "Swami, I want to share with you an experience. Can I share?" And Swami suddenly came back, as if from that ethereal realm to this normal realm. "Huh? What is that? What do you want to share?" "Now, Swami, this is something that happened when I was in 5th class." "Huh? What happened? "Swami, the Shankaracharya..." "Huh? Shankaracharya came. What happened after that?" "So, Swami, he had come here and my parents told me not to go, to ask me to go, and I was not interested." Then Swami was very, very curious, and he was like, the first time when you hear something like that, and we have seen that childlike curiosity of Bhagwan. Like, it's like Swami is hearing everything for the first time. Oh, Shankaracharya, he is hearing for the first time. House is hearing for the first time. That is how Swami's curiosity will be actually, when, you know, he's that self. And so he started narrating, and Swami kept asking all the details. "What happened then? What did you think? And then what did Shankaracharya, when Shankaracharya came, what did he say?" So he kept narrating, and given Swami's interest, Swami is like sitting on the edge of his chair. Swami now leaning forward and listening to him with so much interest that he started dramatizing it, and he was at his eloquent best trying to explain all the details of what had happened that day. Because everything was very, very clear in his mind. And so Swami heard that whole story, Swami, how Shankaracharya came and he stopped and he asked my name. "Did you tell your name?" "Yes, Swami." "And then what happened?" "He went inside." Then I was standing there. "Then what happened?" "No, Swami, he came out." "So what happened?" "Then so he started, he was wearing a garland and he was wearing this." And then Swami suddenly stopped, told him to stop, and then Swami leaned back, and suddenly he changed. And he was no more that curious childlike self. Suddenly he became that divine self and started narrating. "Then that Shankaracharya came, and then he came to you, and then he removed that crown, he put it on your head, he removed the garland of lemons, and he put that also onto your shoulder, and then he blessed you, and he left." Isn't it?
See, Kanchi Shankaracharya, the Periyars, had said about Swami once to one of his disciples, who had just had Swami's darshan and come. Then Shankaracharya himself said, "Adishakti lives in the form of Satya Sai in Puttaparthi." I read this in one book also. And as he said, but for Swami coming in this form at these times, we too would have been running from pillar to post in search of that seeking which we all have without our knowledge, actually. Otherwise, we too would have been going to this Swami or that Swami. Swami had completely solved this problem for this age, if you see. And as I was reading this, the first few lines where Swami is a very good writer of stories and so many dramas and all that he had scripted. So along the same lines, when Swami writes these Vahinis also, it is actually totally in tune with those times. Like this must have been absolutely during the Dasara and birthday
cusp
period.
And the other thing is, you know, what we are reading is the translation. This is not the original.
I remember this. Actually, I have been coming to Puttaparthi from early 70s and I was a very small child. I remember at least before I settled down in 79, I had seen 10 Dasaras actually. And I was as a small kid and the crowds used to be pretty big for that space those days. And thousands of people will come and many people will come to during the Dasara and stay on till birthday. October to November, after all, it's within a space of 40 days, 45 days, both these grand events take place. And so much crowd, and Swami will give prasadam, vibhuti prasadam and namaskar to all the devotees at the end of the Vijayadashami day. So that people can start moving out. And still people will hang around because they all want to stay on till birthday. And the crowd management is so difficult. So Swami used to move up to Vrindavan just to make this crowd move out. The moment Swami is not there for a space of 7 to 10 days, people will say, okay, let us go and come. So this is exactly the time period Swami is that depicting scenario in this few words here. So beautifully I was remembering that. So, and how beautifully Swami is actually giving us clues of his divinity, because he is writing for the Bhakta as well as himself. So when he says that on the auspicious day of the celebration of your event, it is Swami himself who is writing about it. And he also says the day is holy and most auspicious. Even for those ignorant ones who do not know about his divinity, the clues are there.
Yes,
even by him only.
Yeah, just to add to both beautiful thoughts actually. But one thing which I feel is, we all know that he is a very special being and that he is the ultimate. But I feel when we get those pangs of separation or pain or yearning or intensity, that time it actually strikes us the most, that what he is. So I remember one experience. One of my juniors, he was his name is Venkatesh. He passed out, and he wanted to stay here very badly. He wanted to stay and because knowing that he is everything, he is the ultimate divinity ever born. He wanted to stay here and serve Swami, but there were some commitments back home. Then they were telling him to come back and all. And Swami was like, he will reflect what your parents also feel. He gives a lot of respect to what your parents say. So there's a lot of dilemma going on between him and Swami. Swami says, no, you go. No, Swami, I want to stay. So finally, a stage came where he thought, okay, now I think I cannot stay back. I have to go for good from here. So I remember that evening, it's just Vrindavan, I think, and it was outside the campus. We were just standing there. I just went and met him. He was very crestfallen. A lot of pain in his heart that he's leaving this place. Then I told, what is there? Swami is always with you. Generally we say. Then what he told really struck me. He said, see, knowing, I'm the one who's having diamonds in my hand, full of diamonds in my hand. I'm just throwing them down and picking up pebbles. That's what is my state. Knowing that God is here, God, the ultimate one is here, I'm leaving him and going out. And all of you have the opportunity, or Swami has given you that understanding, and he has created a situation where he is allowing you to retain those diamonds in your hand.
Wow.
For me, knowing that he's everything, he's making me throw them down for small pebbles of stone. What is more lucky? What is more fortunate? I was really speechless. Because I never got to understand that enormity of what he says. We generally think that, oh my God, we are sacrificing the life which is outside and staying here and serving Swami. He told, no, he just put it the other way. He turned it upside down. He told, what? You are getting the best.
Mm-hmm.
We are going out and getting trinkets.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this was because of that pining and that pain that he is going away from Swami. From that pain, what came out was this, I felt this is such pearls of wisdom. I can't forget his face and the tears in his eyes when he told this to me. It's very special. Like he got a glimpse of what Swami is actually, what he's leaving and going from here.
Mm.
So I felt in those times of intensity and that pining, Swami gives us that understanding, that glimpse of what he is. Just to tell that, I thought I'll share his experience.
Oh yes, yeah, absolutely. So, I think as Brother Srinivas Rao also was saying, see, it is Swami himself is the bhakta. And as a bhakta, Swami is telling, apart from witnessing your birthday celebrations, I can seek your blessings for the birth of jnana and bhakti in my heart, you know. And Swami says, yes, it's a noble idea indeed. So, this is what Swami wants us.
Yes, to think along that line.
Yes, because, you know, as Bhakta he's telling that and as Swami he's telling yes. So, of course, again, as Bhagwan he says also, so do you mean to say that Bhakti and Jnana will not be born in other days other than the birthdays? And then, as we are discussing, just to reiterate the importance of that day and the to drive home the immensity of the phenomenon that in whose presence we are in. That is why Bhagavan says, through the words of the Bhakta, know the advent of your auspicious form happens on an auspicious day and time.
Yes.
And it is such a propitious day for entire universe, for entire mankind, that we cannot let that day go just like that. And again, through the words of the Bhakta, Swami is telling that at least on such sacred day, we have to ensure that your sacred words purify our heart and get established there. The birthday is around the corner, and I think that is a message
for
all of us that can we go to Swami that day and say, Swami, on this sacred day, your words have purified my heart and your words have got established in me. If we can say to Swami, this one line of your teaching, this one dictum that you constantly reiterated, has got completely inscribed in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is what Bhagwan is urging us towards.
Just like when Lord Vamana appears before Bali Chakravarti, his Guru Shukracharya, Bali Chakravarti's Guru Shukracharya, he warns Bali Chakravarti to not to take that short little person in front of him to be any ordinary person.
Yes.
Don't take him to be any ordinary person. He can consume the entire universe.
Mm.
But Bali Chakravarti did not understand because he felt that he can give anything that whatever he, I don't know if it's right to say, he had that ego that he is the one who can give anything in charity. Like, so likewise, actually, if you see, we should not take this bhakta to be any ordinary person who is, you know, just conversing in this as a, by way of a dialogue. It is the Lord himself who is talking about himself.
Yes, absolutely. And then you have Bhagwan again say that, okay, so that is good. So what is the doubt you have today? Now that we are in Sandhya Nivarini, so what is the doubt? And I think here comes a very pertinent aspect, a very important principle when it comes to walking on the spiritual path. And here he says, Bhakta says, I have come today to listen to any of your nectarous words and put them into practice. And he says, even if you go to Kasi, you have Saneeshwara by your side. That's what it believed. Like generally, the meaning of this is that, you know, there'll always be something attached to an auspicious thing which is inauspicious. It can happen that way. I mean, that is what is the meaning, isn't it? Even if you go to Kashi, you have Saneeshwara by your side.
I did not fully understand.
Not to tick off Shani, because it's testing time will be always there. We'll be tested.
Yeah.
So Shani is always...
Yes.
Shani is hard times, testing
even
times.
Even Kashi is a place of a pilgrim.
Shiva himself is there.
But Saneeshwara, Shani is generally connoted as a deity, one of the grahas.
Okay.
When he comes into your face, in your face of life, there will be some testing times. I'm using some polite words because I don't want to... but I'm, of course, Swami says, when my anugraha is there, no grahas can affect.
Yes.
So that is definitely there. But coming to one of the incidents where Swami was telling, where Swami allowed that paralytic stroke to come, and for the 6 or 7 days Swami went, Swami told, I was allowing the dharma of the disease to perform its duty. I allowed it to perform its dharma. I was observing it. I was never a slave. I was always a master of it. I allowed that dharma of that particular disease to go through its whatever phase. Then I took. So even Shani, all the grahas, they also have a particular duty.
Yes.
Okay. So some people say, okay, Swami is there. Because Swami also used to say, give respect to Rahu Kalam. It is not that Swami never said, don't respect deities or this thing. They also are doing a duty. But under a certain situation, we should always remember, we should not use it as an excuse to do our basic duties towards our family. Especially, we know our some of the family members might be like our mothers or grandmothers. They will be very particular about something. But if you say, oh, Swami is there, no problem, I'll go. See, my perspective is, if it is going to hurt their sentiments... If it is going to hurt the sentiments, you, okay, follow the Rahu Kalam part, because at least they are happy. Okay. But to prove that, just because it is little inconvenient for you, and you conveniently use Swami everywhere, and most of the people are doing that. So we should understand one fundamental teaching of Swami is never hurt anybody. Help ever, hurt never. So coming to the point of Saneeshwara, sir, what my understanding is, even if you go to Kashi, there will be some testing thing which is not so smooth. So even coming here, there will be something. But I want the jnana, the pearls of your words, which will override everything else. Because for some people, little difficulties are enough to make them unhappy and they leave. Okay. But if your focus is on Swami's teaching, everything else seems to be insignificant. It's nothing.
But generally, I think one more
perspective. I know what I felt reading this is, if you go to Kashi, it's supposed to be the most sacred place on earth. If you go there, all your sins are washed away and you have become pure. But when people go, is it really, will it really happen? Like, we'll always have that doubt. Okay, I'm going to Kashi. I have done my Ganga bath. I've taken bath in the Ganga and I've had darshan of Vishwanath. But really, I have become pure or not? Because the next day he says, no, I don't have those demons of doubt when I come here.
Yeah.
So probably there is one more thing, like Swami tells in Chinnakatha about Sri Sailam, that there is a thing that if you have darshan of Sri Sailam, Mallikarjuna, you become pure. So then Shiva and Parvati will be, there's a small temple tank there and they'll be old couple, they'll be there and Shiva will be drowning and Parvati will say, please help, please help. So, when the people will come to help, she'll say, only those who have become pure, who are pure only can come and save him. So, no one comes near him. They are having darshan of the Lord and coming out. No one comes and saves. So, the story goes, I don't know if Swami has told this or I've read somewhere, I'm not sure. So, one prostitute will be coming out and she'll just come directly and come to save, hold his hand and, no, how can you come? Are you pure? He told, yes, so what? whatever I have done, I have had darshan of the Lord, and they say if you have darshan of Srisala Mallikarjuna, you become totally pure. So I have done, has a darshan, I am perfectly pure.
Mm-hmm.
So immediately they shall have darshan of both Shiva and Parvati.
Shiva and Parvati.
So I think faith.
This is something very innate in all of us. Thing is, we always, even see, for example, when Swami has n number of times have addressed us Atma Swarupa Lava, Prema Swarupa Lara, we have to be very careful here, because purely coming from the faith perspective, if so, when we believe, when we have complete faith that Swami is God, and when He is saying something, it is true. But still we'll put our ego, or this thing that we are not good enough, we are not perfect. See, which is more important? God's word or your belief? Your belief or your, which comes from the ego. Again, the egoistic pride way will be, oh, now I'm perfect and all.
Mm. Not that
not that,
not
that, that is the other extreme, mm. which will lead to other extremes. But honestly, as a bhakta, as a sincere, humble devotee, when Lord has said so, it is so.
It is so, yes.
And with that faith, no, every moment, what meaning we are giving to a life, no, is what defines our experience. When in the beginning you told Swami is Parabrahman, okay. See, if today, for example, when I was entering ashram, somehow, it was a long stretch, right, from the Gopuram gate till that straight path, no? One thought just came. See, this is the ashram of God. God made this ashram. Just a thought, and that thought, what meaning it gave to my whole experience of that ride of, say it was a 1 minute ride, but that feeling, it was just building up. Every moment, no, what meaning we give to a particular experience, no, is what defines or gives meaning to that experience. So that is very, very important. Mm. Without giving a meaning, it is like khana, peena, sona, nothing else. Even when we are reading this, what meaning? Swami is always giving us an opportunity to put that meaning in our head. Okay, and then you feel it in your heart. And that totally changes your
knowledge,
the way you experience.
Knowledge grows from reflection.
Reflection.
Actually.
Reflection.
Mm.
Otherwise, it is a great loss of opportunity, which we call life.
No, even as we read this Sandeha Nivarini, we are growing in our knowledge actually.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, we never had applied ourselves. But when you read and try to understand, then so much more meaning is happening.
Happening.
It's all automatic. From somewhere it's coming. Within.
And one more thing, sir. See, the word Swami used is jewel. I will give you, it's an ornament. Mm. Okay, where do we keep the ornament? We don't keep it on a sofa or a bed. We treasure it. And Swami says you should treasure it. So it is not like one of the so many things in life that we have, okay. You have it as a center of your life. What is it? Swami says it is prema. It is love. It is so important. You should apply it everywhere in your life. And when you see, whenever you see a form of expression of love anywhere, it is God. It is that Paramatma. Which in turn will give you the ultimate realization of life that everything is God. So it is again coming down to that. If he limits Swami to a physical form which came and left after 86 years, and we leave it at that, then we are again not understood what Swami is saying. Swami is God, no doubt, but the same God self is there in everyone, including all animate, inanimate things. So we have experienced, we have tasted what that love is. The love spoke to us. We were lucky that it's the pure divinity spoke to us. Swami wrote Vahinis. We are discussing, we are reading. And the thing is, the experience of Rajesh brother, which you shared also, no? It is like when I was listening to it, it is like, suppose there's a movie, a director is sitting, you don't know that the director of the movie is sitting next to you. And you both watch the movie, and later when you come out, the director says, how's the movie? Okay. So you give your understanding what it is. Actually, there are certain points in the movie which the director wants to drive home into the mind of the audience.
Yes.
But if you miss the whole point, no? Suppose you miss the whole point of what was meant to be, then it is like the director will be, what have I achieved? But if you understand the point, the joy the director feels, the whole situation. In fact, once one boy was telling Swami, we are here to receive your love. Please, we want your grace. And Swami told, see, if I have created the sun, the moon, the earth, the whole cosmos, and made the earth rotate around the earth, I've done all that so that you come and sit in front of me, you have experience, I've done so much, don't you think it is my grace? I mean, we are looking at this small aspect, but God has to do so many things. At the end of it, if you fail to realize, it's all about His love. then what a big, I mean, you lost the whole point. So this thing which Swami says, this is the heart of it, treasure it, always remember it. And one thing is there, whenever you're leaving the house also, no, you will always be thinking about whether it's logged, it's kept safe or not. Mm. So it is something which is not one of the 100 things that we go through in our life. It is very, very special, and it is a center, it should be center of our life, and it should be treasured in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something which we have to, again, in the medium of satsang, or even after going out in introspection, mananam, we should always remember this.
Mm.
And in his own beautiful way, you know, he'll give his, that experience, that straight touches our heart. It might be insignificant if I narrate it, but for me at that moment, no, because I have sent a thought, a feeling to the universe, and the universe responds, that is so special, and that gives meaning to life, that enriches the life that we call being a human life.
Hmm.
Very well said.
Absolutely. Well, just to come back to what Bhagwan is talking when he's referring to this statement, even if you go to Kashi, you have Saneeshwara by your side. I think what Swami is telling is, as you referred to, that even when you go to an auspicious place like
you
Kashi,
you won't be spared of this.
Even then, there could be testing times. Correct. And even when you do a sacred thing, there could be certain challenges and certain impediments. But here, the Bhakta is telling, but unlike that, I did not bring the demon of doubt with me.
Mm-hmm.
Is what he's telling is generally, the doubts always come. You know, even when you're walking on the spiritual path, you have that faith, you listen to Swami, you see so many miracles, you have read so much about him, you have seen enough of him to have that 100% faith, but still the doubt comes. Still.
What is the medicine for this doubt?
So that's what we are coming, no?
No, man, Swami has given something very
yes.
profound in the next
And here he says, I did not bring the demon of doubt along with me today, nor did it follow me. And he says, this is due to your unbounded grace. See, again, and Swami is telling very good. Again, through the Bhakta, Bhagwan is communicating this important point that it is great that the doubt did not come with you. The doubt did not come on its own also.
Mm-hmm.
And this happened only through grace.
Grace.
So to your grace. Question, yeah. You know, how to get rid of the doubts. I think the straight answer here is unbounded grace. Yes. And it happens only through unbounded grace. But of course, for grace, you always have to put your effort. But to have that complete doubtless constant Hanuman-like faith, I think you need the grace of the divine.
See, even to the students, you know, who are actually befuddled with so many doubts, like when a public outside, say, criticizes Swami, this has been also a common thing.
Yes.
So Swami was attending to those issues also. And Swami used to tell to the boys, ee pichi pichi vanni vini chadivi, మీరు స్వామితో దూరం కాకండి, ఆ దరిద్రం పట్టకూడదు మీకు. లైక్ దట్ షుడ్ నాట్ టచ్ యూ.
డోంట్ గెట్ క్యారీడ్ అవే బై
ఎస్
ఆల్ దీస్ రిపోర్ట్స్ ఇన్ ద న్యూస్ పేపర్.
ద గ్రేటెస్ట్ అన్ఫార్చునేట్ థింగ్ ఇట్ ఇస్ దరిద్రం మీన్స్ దట్ యు నాట్ టచ్ యూ.
ట్రాన్స్లేట్ దట్ ఇన్ టు ఇంగ్లీష్ నౌ. ఆ దరిద్రత మీకు పట్టకూడదని.
దట్ మిజరీ షుడ్ నాట్ బి. Should not be touched
pray,
by that misery.
Pray that does not befall you.
Mm.
Where you lose faith.
That is where the grace helps.
You lose faith listening to
all the gossip.
Yes.
Yes.
Very well said.
In fact, it is so toxic. Swami says, just run away. If even for a casual entertainment, if some people are discussing, and even if it falls into your ear, just run away. Don't walk. Run away from this place. Because the catch of that negativity is so infectious, no, in the wrong way, that even the best of the mind, no, they also shake. Mm. Why? When Ramkatha Raswaini, Swami says, even person like Lakshmana, when you suddenly raised his voice against Rama in a particular patch of forest, which was a Surpanakha area. So after some, Rama kept quiet, they kept walking. And after some few minutes, Lakshmana was shocked. Brother, what just happened? Why did I raise voice against you? Why? He started saying, why should we suffer? Somebody has taken a vow boon and all that. So Rama told that was Surpanakha area. It was bad vibes. So that affected your mind. For a person
to
like
quote
Lakshmana,
you, Saneshwara was doing his job.
Yeah. Yeah, so Rama.
Next to Rama. Yeah.
So everybody is allowed to do their job. But thing is, that is how powerful person like Lakshmana, is called Jitendriya, who won Indrajit. Okay. He also was susceptible to that. So how much more we have to be careful? I mean, so
absolutely,
there's no antivirus. See, so this is run away.
Swami's miracles, no, are so many. In spite of that, Swami used to tell, "Enta chves chanta chesina, meer andro doubting Thomas's."
How much ever I show, yeah, how much ever I exhibit
and,
my miracles,
those who have doubts are destroyed. Samshayatma
vinashyati. One thing which happens, many devotees are told, when times, difficult times in life, when so many traumatic events happen in life, that is when the devotion weakens, sort of faith weakens for many people, and troubles, you know, when the troubles, whether it is related to health or financial issues or it can be relatives or so many things, when things are happening in a way which is not, many of us don't realize the importance of a normal life. If your life is normal, no, that itself is a great boon. Okay. So when things come and hit, that's when the bhakti, the faith, many people actually they went out. That's one way of telling Swami, Swami, what is this and all. But heart of heart, we all know. Okay. We are only facing certain form of karmas, our own karmas. But thing is, nobody is eternally doomed. At that moment, the doubt should not creep in. And that moment, and adding to that, if a wrong company is there to fuel it, we are. So that is why in the normal time when things are fine, no, we should be, the attitude of gratitude should be there and the love and all this should be going in. Otherwise, when the real time test comes, no, the rope is hanging, but when you put the weight, then only you know the strength of the weight. Otherwise, rope is hanging normally. So everybody thinks the test of the rope strength comes when you attach something. So when the difficult time comes and attaches to us, at that moment, if we have not done the dharma of a bhakta to, you know, every incident that we hear of Swami, everything that we contemplate is adding an additional thread of devotion which strengthens the rope. And no amount of wait time, even when the test comes, when a karma has to come at a particular point of time. But if we have not done this duty, when at that point it comes and if we have not strengthened it, it will snap. Yes. But if this period when we have done this satsang, we have done swadhyaya and we have just, which has built the strength of the rope, even if a heavy weight comes, no, it doesn't matter. So what? The karma didn't change. We have strengthened. So if that understanding is there, and if we go by the this way of living, whatever calamity comes, even if a big rock falls on our head, it will not affect us because we have, not that we have become headstrong.
Wear a helmet.
Yeah. We have got the strength. We have become stronger.
Absolutely. So here, Swami is saying that when these doubts do not come of themselves, nor are they entertained by you, that is to be considered as purity.
Purity.
So, ultimately, purity is the essence of all sadhana, Swami says. And the analogy of the strengthening the rope that you are mentioning is basically adding strands of purity to ourselves, you know, to build this strong self of purity. Swami says the way is to have no doubts, and I think once you have no doubt, then you will automatically have that purity. And
last chapter also Swami talked about doing karmas to attain this purity.
Yes. Good. Absolutely karmas. Yes. Chittasya suddhai karmani. That's what is mentioned in the scriptures. So Swami says when these two happen, then it is called one-pointedness. So I think this is something again very significant, I feel, because Swami is saying here ultimately the way to purity is to have no doubts. And that is what is one-pointedness.
So what are the two things Swami said?
You should not have
any doubts.
No, they should not come on their own, and you should not
you entertain them. Okay.
Yes, yeah, they should not come of themselves, nor they should be entertained by you. So I think, as he's saying, I mean, you should never be anywhere in the vicinity of it, and the doubts and you should repel each other.
Correct. Yes. In fact, many of us, many people, many devotees with all good intentions, you know, they try to convince. See, the moment a person is questioning, you know that his attitude. If he's cynical, if he's already made up his mind, it's like putting water on a stone. Don't waste your breath. Okay. Mm-hmm. In fact, the certain things he'll tell, no, it'll go and stick somewhere in his mind. Your faith might weaken.
Mm-hmm.
But if a person is asking with a genuine interest of knowing who Satya Sai Baba is, what his mission is, that is a different thing. But a person who's bent upon proving everything that you are, in first few lines only you'll get to know what kind of person is.
See, in fact, Swami himself used to tell that you come and test me.
Yeah.
He himself is challenging or taking up the challenge.
Challenge.
You know, he says that just because somebody criticizes and challenges me, I am not going to reply to him.
Correct.
Why will I go for a fight with someone who is not my equal?
Correct.
An equal is one like a devotee.
Devotee.
Mm-hmm. He is asking him genuinely out of, you know, some seeking in curiosity to improve his...
It's a samskara which he has carried from several births, and Swami only knows that.
But just for some hearsay and criticism, say, come and walk on the water, challenges.
One more unfortunate thing about Kali Yugam right now is everybody sees a number. You upload a video, how many people saw? That defines the quality of the video.
How many likes you got,
the whole world thinks that is truth. Okay, whatever. And if you see some of the videos which has got millions of views, may have absolutely meaningless. It is. But some very good quality, good content wise, I'm saying. But there might be a few hundred people who have viewed it. That doesn't mean that.
In fact, there are, just to add to what you're saying, there are social media management companies.
Yes.
You know, who say, okay, you tell how many views you want. So these are bots.
Yeah.
Which will just do that.
Oh, it has gone to next level now.
Yeah, so if you want 1 lakh views for that video, it'll be done. Because if you're okay with numbers can be generated. Yeah.
No, also gives a glimpse of the majority, I'm talking about the taste of the majority of mankind is today. So that shows what the taste and where the mind is where the mind is really enjoying or entertaining itself. So,
I mean, the challenge of the times is there is this democratization of information and there is information overload. And you know, as Swami, I always remember this analogy. Even this morning, this thought was occurring when I was looking at the students today. I had the chance to be in the college to witness the elocution competition, and I was looking at the students and I was feeling, see, it is great that these boys do not have access to mobile phones.
Really?
Because when a little sapling is growing, that fence is so important.
Correct.
And I think it is so very critical that that stem is strong before it can withstand the pulls and pressures of the winds and the vagaries of nature. But today we are in a time where even before the stem is even able to stand on its own, it is swamped.
If you put a fence, they see it as an offense, actually. And really, I mean, because 10 months of all mehnat, 2 months when they go home, when the fence is removed, now it's the duty of the parents to put the fence, but they take it as an offense thing.
In the very early days of these mobiles coming up, Swami once remarked very cutely, he said, what is that small little thing everybody carries in his hand or in his pocket, he said. Then he himself said, in the coming days, in the coming times, this will do a lot of harm. And it has already begun to do the harm.
Yes.
I can feel it. Not able to stay away from it. The finger moves every moment. And the mind is so restless.
The whole thing of single-pointedness goes off.
Yes.
With this, yes.
Yeah.
Because we're talking devotion is bhakti. If you see Kulwant Hall, 10,000 people come. They sit, they sing bhajan. 10,000 people's mind is on one, which is Satya Sai Baba, which is God. But if you look at mobile phone, one person sitting, okay, and you are on Facebook, you've got 500 friends, likes, your mind is... So the
your mind has gone in 10,000 directions.
That is anti-spiritual. So the spirituality brings one-pointedness, whereas this world, takes your mind, it disperses your mind, which is totally ulta.
Yes.
So you, totally that, this example yeah. itself, you see nice, how, nice how it is yeah. different.
So in these times, that's why, I mean, so there are more opportunities for you to get swayed by people's views, and one doubt gets clear, tomorrow another doubt crops up. One prayer is answered, you are at a high, and tomorrow another prayer is not answered and you are in doldrums. And so I think that is the reason why Swami is stressing so much here about you not only not entertaining doubts, but doubts not being anywhere near you.
Vishwavada, one more fundamental tragedy of mind is, it wants entertainment.
Yes.
It wants thrill. Yes. That is a fundamental, I mean, tragedy yeah. of mind, what if, yeah. if I were to put in another way. Even yeah. a very sincere bhakta, no?
yes.
Living a very sattvic diet, and even the sattvic, somewhere yeah. the mind, no, it wants yes. a thrill.
Yes.
Okay, so that is, I don't know, that's the dharma of the mind maybe. Survival, maybe, because it's dharma in the sense.
And that is the way the mind survives.
Ah, mind yeah. It is the opposite of atmic thrill actually.
Correct.
Because once you obtain that object of your desire, you are not that thrilled actually. You want to seek something beyond else. That, something
yes.
greater.
Yes.
Because the actual bliss is really greater than
greater
this.
Greater than this.
So you are seeking that. The mind's job is only to teach you not to seek this joy in this.
This, yeah. But even then after one day you fall back on. Even after repeated, for example, Swami says, it's like drinking a salt water. Mm. Okay. You are thinking of drinking water to quench your thirst. But the fact that the salt of desire is there, it only increases or aggravates your thirst. The more you drink, the more thirsty you feel. Okay. Mm. So the thing is, the more for a man, even a wise person, so-called wise person, a person who is sincere in swadhyaya, in satsang, and he is taking all the precaution, though he has got a taste of vairagyam due to certain things, and vairagyam at an early stage of life is a great blessing, because you don't end up losing all the strength of your body and senses, then realize, oh, I've been cheated by my own mind.
Yes.
Okay. That is one of the saddest, if only I would have realized it earlier, is one of the saddest statement for any human being. So if you have a glimpse of a vairagyam, genuine vairagyam, not out of the escapist thing which Arjuna had in the beginning, he wanted to escape from, not from that perspective. We have to be very careful in the discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
Not with the escapism type of attitude, but with an honest, discriminate introspection, based on Shastras, because our thing is, our Sanatana Dharma is a very dynamic Dharma. It says Karma Yoga, you should work. So thing is, with honest introspection also, even after tasting certain incidents where you have had a taste of Vairagyam, still, still, there is somewhere where the mind again wants to go back to the thrill of catching up with things and all that. Now, how to tame or arrest that particular, of course, devotion is an answer. Praying to Swami is an answer. But I'm just maybe seeking as a younger brother an answer. Ki, when the mind gets that sense the trigger to experience the thrill, what is it that the buddhi should tell the mind? Okay. So that it doesn't again fall back to its own foolishness. I hope I'm making sense.
Yes.
That is the tragedy of life, because mind continuously seeks change. If you look at a phone, you want to go from one to another. It's because you are looking for joy. You're looking for something which will keep you entertained. And so it is something, a constant stream of change that you want. Even in a satsang, you want humor, you want joke. In the sense, no, you will remember some, many times you will remember the joke more than the actual content. Okay. I mean, I'm saying,
yes.
Okay, at least to begin with, it's a better thing. But after some time, when you're looking at a serious stuff, purity gives that silence and the wisdom. The more purer you are, the more lesser you speak and you understand it, and that's it. Okay, a jnani won't speak. In fact, one example which Swami gave, I'll share this. Swami says, world is like a mental hospital today. If you go to a mental hospital, you see people biting each other, they're throwing things at each other. Now people are talking about throwing bombs and destroying an entire population. Okay, world has become a mental hospital. Swami says, even in a mental hospital, you'll see one mad person sitting in the corner looking at the entire show. Okay, he's not interested. He is a different type of mental patient. He's in depression. He's seeing everything. So Swami says, a jnani is like that. He's in the world. He looks at the world in a very detached way, and what is this? It doesn't make sense why the world is running about things the way are. So he says, at least that mental patient who's silent, no, is less harmful compared to the rest of the population. So, I mean, Swami gives an example, is like, okay, you observe it, but don't become part of it. At the same time, the only saving grace is you have an insight that when you see this, this is not the real, there's something else which is the real, which is God. And it is a blessing in disguise, because the moment that Vairagyam comes, then only you truly turn towards God. In fact, that's when you make your journey seriously. That's when your real birthday or the realization of things starts that, okay.
True. Absolutely.
Actually, you know what? This same thing. I was reading a discussion which was happening on one of our old students. This thing. The difference between these two is what the difference between Indra and Rudra. They call it. Indra is the one who is the caretaker of the senses, who just takes care of the senses. Wherever they want to go, he just okay.
Indriyas. Mm-hmm.
Because Indra is supposed to be the adhipati of all the Indriyas.
Mm-hmm.
And so he doesn't come actually, and he's not a master of the senses. He just caretaker of senses. You want to go and see this? Okay. You want to go and listen to this? Fine. Eat this? Fine. But Swami, the second part of it is Rudra. Rudra is someone who's actually a master of the senses. He controls them and puts them in place and tells them the real truth is not this, real truth is inside. So, as you told, the journey is between, is it Indra or Rudra? And that is what is a dilemma for every human being, every human mind.
And it's a daily thing. It's sort of a...
I think it's moment to moment. Not daily, moment to moment.
It's a huge discussion by itself.
Correct.
And but definitely something... worth contemplating upon, because this is something which will help all of us on the spiritual
Correct.
Path.
Correct.
And again, like in spirituality, there is no one answer.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
And there are only pointers, there are only certain principles that are laid down in the scriptures and which Bhagwan has again and again reiterated. And there are certain methods that few people have adopted, but I think each one has to find their own way to tame their mind and sublimate. Ultimately, you should not succumb to the mind. You should not suppress the mind, but you have to sublimate the mind. I think that is the only way. And how to do it is the key.
Just yesterday I was reading, we can maybe end with this, that the space between two thoughts, there is a small little
gap.
That is your being.
Mm.
Be with that. Don't look for solution at the mental level.
Maybe that, because
just
even
that,
as brother
that
was
makes
telling,
you go within actually.
Yes, because the analogy which was coming in my mind is, you take a raw mango and a ripe mango. See the difference in the taste. One is bitter, one is so sweet. Unfortunately, life after life, if we are dropping out of the tree as in the raw mango, not ripening, the divine... our master, divine master, is waiting for the mango to ripen. When he sees that birth after birth, if he is again, you know, dropping off the tree as a raw, and you're not ripening. So I was in my mind as you were speaking, is like, how or at what point the mango ripens or starts ripening, the sweetening process. So probably, yes, between the two thoughts, when we are more connected with our true being, the ripening takes place. So the essence is, the more we are in the world of mind, of thoughts, the more we are retarding the process of ripening. Okay. But if the more we dive deep or try to be in the face of just being, we are allowing the ripening to happen. And automatically all the wisdom, all the answers that we are looking for, which is there inside us, will come up and will ripen. So comes out as an introspective takeaway for me.
Discussion. And I think that is one very beautiful perspective, and there are so many more perspectives because mind is a universe by itself.
Yes.
And how to control the mind is all about spirituality. I mean, ultimately that is what it is. All spirituality is controlling all the vices, and that is what is basically controlling the mind.
This birth, we can do it, no brother.
Definitely. Why that doubt?
We can do it now.
That is the problem.
We will do it.
Actually, the right approach is, you can do it now.
Now. That is one thing, sir. This really scares me, because Paripurna Avatara came. We came at his lotus feet. In fact, before coming to Swami, I came at the age of 16. I got to know about Swami. At the age of 18, I joined as a student. I used to go to temple. I used to look at Krishna. I used to look at Bhuvaneshwari. I used to talk what all my problems are pour out. But one thought will be, are you listening? Means, okay, I hope. Okay, because it's all, I've heard other people's experience stories. Yes. But the greatest boon of Avatar, God coming as a human being, and you have a direct experience. You have no doubt that God came. Now the next thing comes, God, please, I should make it in this. If not in this birth, I don't know which birth. But things are so
so
obvious.
If not now, when?
When? If not now, when?
As Vishu brother told in introductory remarks itself, that every sentence there is a clue. You don't need to wait to read the entire Sandeha Nivarini to realize the truth. Truth, the clues are there in every sentence.
And so, dear listeners, do make use of this opportunity, make use of this treasure that Bhagwan has given us. And in fact, Swami, further down in this chapter, has clearly laid down so many tenets and principles that we can follow. In fact, if we take even one of them, our life will be sanctified. We'll be coming to that in the future sessions of discussion on Bhagwan Sandeha Nivaran. If you have any queries, anything you want to add to the discussion, please feel free. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. You can also send us your comments on our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Thank you so much for being with us. And Sai let's see how Bhagwan guides us this discussion in this birthday month. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.